you're right, and you know that you're right on target here at Hicks Target. My name is Mark Antrim, and these are the Nihilists. On my left, a man the band likes to call the saxophone player. Only been playing saxophone for 3 weeks. Isn't that amazing? And on my right, on a work release program from San Bruno County Jail, I'm Leopard Skin Johnson. The one, the only. In their chains. Reagan's election was no surprise. You voted for Nixon twice. Why? Because you're stupid. Blame it on the black folks. Blame it on the Jews. Blame it on anybody not like you. You can blame it on the red. Blame it on the greens. But you never blame put the blank on the
Yes, thank you, the San Francisco Mime Troupe, live right here in the studios of KPOO, not. Hello, this is your host, Paul Kangas, on KPOO, and this is Reality Sandwich, the continuing investigation into the murder of President John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, and Dorothy Kilgallen, with a little bit of humor once in a while, and a lot of help from the San Francisco Mime Troupe. Today's program, you'll find, is special in several ways. We just had an excellent, exciting conference this weekend in which Michael Canfield, the famous investigative journalist, spoke. We sent press releases to every television, radio, newspaper outfit in the Bay Area, and none of them showed up to hear Michael Canfield present the evidence showing that the Watergate burglars E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, Richard Nixon, and George Bush were all involved in the assassination of John Kennedy. But considering the depth, degree of complicity by the media in this country with the cover-up, it's hard to expect the media to show up for a major press conference. Fortunately, this intrepid reporter was there, and we'll have a report shortly with Michael Canfield introducing you to the Warren Commission report and a poll that NBC did showing that 94% of the American public is interested in the Kennedy assassination still today. Okay, I'll get to the Canfield interviews shortly. Meanwhile, there's a new conference coming up, which will probably be the blockbuster of the year. Gene Hill. Who? Gene Hill. That's right. The famous woman eyewitness who stood right next to John Kennedy when he was assassinated, who saw the assassins, who then ran after the assassins up the grassy knoll, behind the picket fence on the grassy knoll, through the railroad yard, and over to the boxcars, where she pointed out and helped the police arrest E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis for the assassination of John Kennedy. That's Gene Hill. We'll be speaking in San Francisco on Sunday, September 6th, 1992, at Fort Mason Center at the Firehouse Theater, at 11 a.m. on Sunday. So you might want to be there. You'll find it's going to be a fairly exciting time. And there'll be a couple of other people there. Hal Verb will be speaking, a longtime investigator into the assassination. He was the first person to show the Zapruder film in this country. He'll be speaking, as will a new author named, I hope I don't mispronounce his name, Jim Licavilli, who's got a new book out. He promised he'd have it to me last week. It hasn't arrived yet. As soon as I get it, I'll do a review of it for you and give you the highlights of his new book. He'll be speaking September 6th, as will myself, Paul Kangas, a former bodyguard for President Kennedy, and presently working as a private investigator in San Francisco. If you would like ticket information about the September 6th Labor Day JFK conference, special JFK conference, please call our office during normal working hours, which is from about 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. You can reach somebody at the office. Call 897-0153. That's, of course, in the 415 area. 897-0153. Or you can reach me directly by calling my pocket pager, 991-8448. And touch tone in your number, and I'll call you back. Anyhow, let's go to the Gene Hill. I just want to reiterate, Gene Hill is an actual eyewitness who has written a new book called The Last Dissenting Witness. She will be speaking in San Francisco Sunday, September 6th. Gene Hill is a very important person in this country on the assassination. After she did all these heroic acts of chasing down the actual assassins, she went to the FBI and said to the FBI, "Hey, you're looking in the wrong place. We have found the actual assassins over here behind the grassy knoll." And the FBI agent grabbed her, threw her around, slapped her around, put her in a chair, threatened her, shook her up. This was in the movie JFK, you probably saw it, and told her, "You did not see anybody shoot at the president from behind the grassy knoll. That is not true. You did not see that. You did not see that. Do not tell anybody that anymore. That's wrong. Do you hear me? Do you understand?" And Jean Hill nodded, and she understood what was going on. And in the following day, she understood why she understood. Eyewitnesses who were speaking out about, "Hey, Oswald didn't do it. It was these people behind the grassy knoll." Anybody that was saying things like that, all of a sudden, turned up dead the next day. And Jean Hill noticed that all these people she knew in Dallas. Jean Hill is a school teacher, was back in 1963 in Dallas, Texas, and still is a school teacher in 1963. She noticed all these people were dropping dead. So she went quiet, went underground, went silent for 20-some years, 28 years. Only after Jack Anderson tracked her down did Jean Hill decide to talk after all these years. And then Oliver Stone tracked her down and put her in the movie. And I got wind of her because one of the actors in the JFK movie had received some of my material, read my book, and his father was very interested in the subject. And this actor in the JFK movie called me up one day and said, "Hey, I just read your book about E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis' involvement in the assassination of John Kennedy and George Bush and Richard Nixon's involvement. This is pretty amazing stuff because, you know, I'm working on this JFK movie, and I want to know what's going on. I mean, is this movie that we're Oliver Stone putting out the truth, or is it just more lies?" And so I had a long talk with this actor, and in the process, he mentioned that Gene Hill, the famous Gene Hill, was now a consultant for Oliver Stone on the movie. And I was very impressed that he told me that, and asked if he knew how I could contact her, and he didn't. So I proceeded to use my sleuthing abilities and tracked down Jean Hill and called her up on the telephone, and she was shocked that somebody could find her that way, and she changed her phone number immediately after I talked to her. But I was able to track her down and convince her to come to San Francisco to speak after the movie was over and after she was out of her contract with Oliver Stone. And now Jean Hill is out of her contract with Oliver Stone. In fact, Stone has written the introduction to her new book, The Last Dissenting Witness. So Jean Hill will be coming to San Francisco to speak Labor Day. All right, with that, Now let me turn you over to Michael Canfield, who's going to be talking about the Warren Commission report and how the CBS did an interview, a poll of Americans, and found that 94% of the American public does not believe the Warren Commission report and believes that the CIA was involved in the killing of John Kennedy. So remember out there, dear listener, you are not alone. And now, Michael Canfield.
But 94% of the people are assassination nuts in this country, therefore. And it is not, well, people will label you that. I know I've been labeled an assassination nut. And as it turns out, 94% of us are assassination nuts. So don't feel like you're in the minority anymore. You are not. No one believes the Warren Commission report except maybe the people who wrote it. And for a very good reason. Right, exactly. So I'm going to try to review why they killed Kennedy. I think that's pretty much been established here today. You have to understand American history. During this, the country was very anti-communist. The Cold War was going on very heavily, and when Castro turned up 90 miles off the American shore, the CIA and the State Department went a little crazy, and they put together the Bay of Pigs invasion, which was planned under the Eisenhower administration, and actually Carlos Prio, who was the president of Cuba before Batista, said that the Bay of Pigs was actually planned by Richard Nixon, who was the operations officer for the Bay of Pigs invasion under the Eisenhower administration. He was the liaison between the intelligence community and the Eisenhower administration for the Bay of Pigs invasion in particular. And they tried to launch the invasion before the 60 election, but because of, for various reasons, they were not able to do it. But it didn't seem to matter to them, because all the polls said that the intelligence community's boy, Richard Nixon, was going to win the election anyway. So they figured, well, before or after, it doesn't matter, we're going to be in power. But in the closest election in the history of America, and mainly it had to do with a couple reasons, one is that it's the first time that television was used in a presidential campaign in a great extent, where it really affected the outcome of the election. Today, it's almost all television. But back then, 1960 was the first time it was really used effectively. And it's also the first time that the word political charisma was coined. Kennedy had it, Nixon didn't. And plus some shenanigans down in Cook County, Illinois. Yay. Kennedy came into office behind the closest election in the history of America. And he was handed the Bay of Pigs invasion. Now, Arthur Schlesinger Jr. was a speechwriter for Kennedy. He wrote a historical chronicle of the Kennedy administration called 1,000 Days. It's a good book. You should get it. You can get it in old bookstores. In that book, he said that the CIA ramrodded the Bay of Pigs invasion by the Kennedys. And eventually, the Kennedys just threw up their hands and said, well, if you're going to go, you're going to go. So he let them have their little invasion, but he said no American involvement. But in the middle of the invasion, they were losing it. They needed an Air Force strike to win the battle. They came to Kennedy and said, we need the Air Force. Now, this is all documented. And he said, no air strike. Consequently, they lost the battle and blamed Kennedy for it. Now, E. Howard Hunt, who was the CIA's man who handpicked the puppet government that was going to be installed once they won the battle, the plan was to establish a beachhead, and then Paul Kangas and the rest of the crew would come in with the puppet government that E. Howard Hunt had handpicked from the community, who was now going to work for the CIA, and they would radio and say, this is Radio Free Cuba, we need help. And only then could the U.S. Marines go in. But they had to establish that beachhead. It never happened. But E. Howard Hunt was very much involved in that. And so when it failed, E. Howard Hunt wrote a book called Give Us This Day, which is his chronicle of the Bay of Pigs invasion. And in there, he just about calls Kennedy a communist. Very, very livid with anger as to what happened to his friends and compadres on the beaches of Cuba. Now, I also, during the course of doing the book, I interviewed Frank Sturgis, who is a CIA operative. In fact, he, let's run the slideshow. I can talk from that and show you some pictures here. Okay, this is a map of the grassy knoll area here. I hope everybody can see this. And this is how I got involved in the Kennedy assassination. And let me say this. Before, I never was into the Kennedy assassination until I saw what is now called the famous tramp photographs. My co-author, Alan Weberman, had already come into possession of the tramp photographs. And basically what the tramp photographs were, there was a train back here behind the Texas School Book Depository. And 20 minutes after the assassination, they had searched the train twice. The Dallas police had searched the train twice and gave it the all clear signal. And the train started to pull out down in this direction here. But there was a fellow named Lee Bowers who was the head of this railroad yard back here in his, it's now called Bowers Railroad Tower. They should put a plaque on this thing. This guy is probably, his actions not only cost him his life, he died in a very mysterious automobile crash not too long after the assassination, but he probably gave us the main link to the modern day assassination theories. And I believe that it was responsible for the JFK movie. It's certainly responsible for my book. And but he did a very brave thing. He saw somebody jump from a boxcar to a gondola car, and he radioed the engineer and stopped the train and had him back it back in. He came down out of his tower, went somewhere over here and found some police officers and said, hey, you guys forgot somebody, and made the police go back to the train that they've already searched twice and found nobody, and take off these three supposed hobos. Now, he then, they're taken off the train here and marched in this direction where seven photographs were taken. I have them labeled here, P1, P2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And they were taken by three area photographers, Dallas Morning News, Jack Beers, various papers, three papers, seven photographs. Hit the next slide, please. And these are the three tramps here. There's one guy standing behind this guy here, the old man tramp, the tall tramp, and this guy was the unknown tramp for a very long time. Next slide, please. This is another shot of the tramps. The reason this is labeled here, I went back and took a photograph of the wall, which has now been obliterated. The Dallas city has totally redone the front of this building, taking out this brickwork and everything. Last time I was there, I was so depressed that they had altered this because it is really evidence at this point in time. You have to understand, we have two conclusions here. The Warren Commission said that it's was a lone nut. The House Select Committee on Assassinations said it was probably a conspiracy. Now, they said that because, well, there was a power struggle within the House Select Committee on Assassinations to control it by the intelligence community, which I could go into later and document for you, but we won't get into that right now. But the fact is that the House Select Committee on Assassinations said it was probably a conspiracy. In other words, they were 95% sure. The wording is very strange, I know. But therefore, the two cannot be correct. Either it was a lone nut or it was a conspiracy, one or the other. Therefore, the case is still open. Okay? And I believe that this is part of the evidence, and they're doing away with the evidence faster than we can come up with it. But when we first came out with the tram photographs, we took them to photographic experts. I went to about 7 different forensic scientists in the New York and Washington, D.C. area to do a photographic analysis of these photographs to determine who these guys were. And after about 3 visits to 3 experts, supposed photo experts, it was like I was talking to parrots. They all said, I showed them the tramp photographs, didn't tell them anything. They said, oh yeah, we've seen these, and it's not Sturgis, because this guy's 6'6", and Sturgis is only 6 foot, and this old guy back here is looks like he's 60 years old, and the Hunt's only 40 years old. And they all said the exact same thing. And I said, well, where did you learn? After it took me about 3 or 4 of these trips to get wise, I said, where did you learn photo identification? For the intelligence community? What? For the intelligence community? Yes, I worked for the Air Force, or I worked for this. Every photographic expert that I could come in contact with was trained by the intelligence community in photo identification. Now, I said, well, we're in trouble here. Because they said, sure, we'll do a study for you. It'll cost you $15,000. But I'll tell you right now, this guy's too tall, and this guy's too old. And they all said the exact same thing, and I thought, something's up here. So, next slide, please. Again, this is a shot of the tramps. There's rumors going around that this could be Dorothy Hunt. I doubt it, because I saw her in a number of other photographs. I think she's just a reporter. This is the old man tramp. This is the man that we identified as E. Howard Hunt. We believe this was Frank Sturgis. And now, a few weeks ago in Dallas, I met a friend of Jack Ruby's, personal friend of Jack Ruby. And she was with Jack Ruby a lot. And she told me that she met this man in Jack Ruby's nightclub, and that his name to her was Roberto Guzman. Okay, now that's the latest, that's right off the hot off the press. I was in Dallas a few weeks ago, and this lady had never seen my book before. And she was going through these photographs and said, oh, I know him. Yeah, I met him in Ruby's club. Yeah, that's Roberto Guzman. Oh, okay, fine. But see, the case, there's people popping up now after the JFK movie that have never come up before. They've been intimidated, they've been scared, and for some reason, because of the JFK movie, they now want to speak out. And so, if any of you are inclined to do research, and you think, well, it's been too long ago, that's not true. There's still lots of things that we need to know, and lots of people to talk to. So I encourage you, as citizens of this great country, to go do something and find out the truth. Question.
What is the basis, I've forgotten, upon which you disagreed with the controversial identification of the middleman, not as Harrelson, but
well,
as...
I'll show you. Have you read my book?
No. I flipped through it, and I haven't thoroughly come over, and I can't recall what you said about Harrelson. You disagreed with other experts
on
that. I was curious as to why.
Okay. In the book, like I was saying, I learned about forensic evidence. I learned about how to do, basically what I did after the 3rd or 4th photo analyst told me it was going to cost me $15,000, but he could already tell me it's not them. What I did was, I would pick their brains. I'd say, okay, I'm going to spend $15,000 here. I want you to tell me what you're going to do with my $15,000. And then they would take me back into their labs and show me the techniques that they would use to do a forensic study. Now, this technique is used in a court of law to identify people from photographs. It's a forensic science. When they started putting cameras in banks, they had to come up with a way to identify people from photographs, a scientific way. Now, one of the ways, can we turn the lights on for a second here? Is the photographic overlay technique. And basically what you do is, these are the tramp photographs here, and you take a constant measurement. And from this particular case, from the tip of the nose to the back of the ear, we made one measurement. And then we took the photograph of the fellow we wanted to compare it to, and you put it on acetate, and you make the same measurements. First you have to have the same angle, like this is a profile, you find a profile of the person you're trying to compare it to. And you print it on acetate. And then you lay one over the other. And what happens is, if it's the person, the features will match. Everybody's face is different, the measurements are different, but what is really important, and this is how I reached the conclusion, if you look on this one, and that's why you all have to buy the book, the ear matches perfectly on the Sturgis comparison. And in a court of law, that's as good as a fingerprint. So that's why we concluded. Now, there's been a great deal of disinformation since the JFK movie has come out. And if you remember, the tramps are featured, let me turn that back off now. The tramps are featured in the JFK movie four times. Four different scenes where you see these guys coming from the boxcars, and you never really explained it too well in the movie. But that's the funny part where Mark Lane is suing Oliver Stone about, when in fact Mark Lane stole it from us. Now, thank you, yes. Because in 1975, we were the first to publish the tramp photographs. And the reason we published the tramp photo, can I have the next slide, please? They had been circulated within assassination information circles for a number of years, but the focus of the investigation was the police officers involved. People thought they didn't have regular shoes, and one guy's supposedly had a radio in his ear, and they thought the cops were involved in some kind of conspiracy until Watergate broke. And when Watergate broke, for the first time, we saw the photographs of Frank Sturgis and E. Howard Hunt on the front page of every paper in the country. And one of the my co-author had the photographs, and was trying to decipher if the police were involved. When I happened to come by his house one day in New York City, and he said, "Look at this." He said, "This tall tramp looks a lot like Frank Sturgis, Watergate break-in artist, Bay of Pigs operative, CIA operative, etc., etc." But next slide, please. But what's even more startling is that this tramp right here looks exactly like E. Howard Hunt. Now, what are the chances of one tramp looking like Sturgis and one tramp looking like Hunt winding up in Dealey Plaza 20 minutes after the assassination? So I said, he said to me, "Do you think this could mean something?" Now, I had been in journalism since I was in high school, and I thought, my God, he's just handed me the story of the century. And then we started doing background checks and investigation on E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, and found out that not only did these guys have the motive, but they had the ability. Earlier you saw the slide of E. Howard Hunt, who's got to have a screw loose, because he puts a shot, he says, "Here I am sniping at the Yangtze River." He's now published himself as a sniper. I don't understand this stuff sometimes. Anyway, now lately, as I was saying earlier, there's a great deal of disinformation about the tramps that have been hitting the media, mainly the Current Affairs show, where they said they found the tramps and found the arrest records of the supposed hobos, and they found the hobos, and therefore it can't be Hunt and Sturgis. Well, I went, when that show came out, I went to Dallas, where the LaFontaines, who did the Current Affairs show, who supposedly broke the story and finally identified the tramps, and I asked them where the tramps were. Now, I knew there was something suspicious when they said, "We're not going to tell you." Now, I said, "Wait a minute. You're a journalist, I'm a journalist. We published these in 1975. I said, "And now you're saying that we're like totally off the wall and we've made this terrible mistake. I think you owe it to me to let me check out your story." Well, they wouldn't give me the location of the tramps, the supposedly new tramps that were really these guys. So, by the way, this is the publishers of Coup d'Etat in America. And they deserve a great round of applause. It's Gene Klein and Ed Roth.
Rosalind.
Rosalind.